life has its ups and downs, the stuff you'd pay money not to remember, and the moments you want to keep forever in that highlight reel at the end of your life. For Mike Birbiglia, it all goes into magic machines and comes out transformed into stories and jokes, like this.
I jumped through a second-story window, and I landed on the front lawn of the hotel. I took a spill, I got back up, and I kept running.
Mike Birbiglia has made a splash in public radio on PRI's This American Life as an author and director of the critically acclaimed movie Sleepwalk With Me. He's touring now with a new show called Thank God for Jokes, and he'll be in Wisconsin this weekend. Mike, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me.
So, Mike, your new show is called Thank God for Jokes. Why? Yes. What do you love about jokes?
Why? It started off, I had my last two shows were these one-person single narrative shows. One was Sleepwalk With Me, which that was a piece of that you just played. And then the recent one was called My Girlfriend's Boyfriend. And they were these off-Broadway shows that had a single narrative arc to them. And then I thought, you know, I'm just going to go back to just what makes me laugh the hardest. You know, I'm just going to tell a bunch of stories and work them out on stage over the funniest stories I can tell. And then what happened was that the more I worked it out over the last 2 years or so on stage, I found that actually the through line was actually jokes and humor and how jokes really get us in trouble, but ultimately make us feel closer to people, and so are sort of worth it in a way. And so that's sort of thematically what the show is about.
And for a lot of your career, your jokes have come in story form from your real-life experiences, a lot of painful, embarrassing moments. Most of us might just try to push those moments down as far into our subconscious as we can.
Sure.
Why, for you, do they come out the other end as a joke?
And I do that too, by the way.
Oh, there's some stuff we haven't heard from you. Hmm.
Yeah. I'm not immune to that. You know, a lot of these stories that, you know, like the titular story from My Girlfriend's Boyfriend, for example, was a story that I really was uncomfortable telling, like even friends, for years and years and years. Like, it's a story about how when I was in high school, I had my first girlfriend. And I was so excited, but then she told me that she had another boyfriend and that they're in the process of breaking up, but it was a bad time. His parents were sick and all this stuff. And I went along with this until finally she invited me to meet her parents. And I was like, okay, this is the vindication I need. And I drive to her house and I meet her parents, and then this other guy comes over. And it's dawning on me that I'm hanging out with my girlfriend's boyfriend, and it's going pretty well, you know. Like, he seems like a nice guy, and he suggests we go hang out at his house. This is entirely true, by the way. And I meet his parents, and I say, it's completely surreal meeting your girlfriend's boyfriend's parents for the first time, because part of you is angry, and then part of you still wants to make a good impression. You're like, well, maybe if this goes well, you just want to succeed. But so anyway, that's actually one of these stories where, like, that happened when I was probably about 16 or 17 years old. I literally wasn't comfortable repeating it to my best friends until I was like 27 years old.
Wow.
And I feel like now, I at this point in my career, like, I've made this discovery of just, no, that's what you should dig into. Like, you should dig into the most painful stuff. And at first, it's not the funniest stuff, but long-term, in my opinion, I think it is.
I don't want to go all public radio on you here, but do you think that makes it easier to bear because you take the painful stuff and you're laughing about it and all of a sudden it's therapy?
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's crucial. I work with a director, a theater director, when I develop these shows, and for us, it's crucial that it's not therapy. Like, it's crucial that ultimately it's about the audience, and that the audience is laughing really hard because they're identifying with something in their life. Like, when I first told them My Girlfriend's Boyfriend story, the one I was just telling you, like, on stage, like, I in a way, it was like therapy because it, you know, I didn't know whether the audience would laugh, but then the more they laugh and the more that I hone the certain lines and beats and the arcs of these stories, the less it becomes like therapy. Because the craziest thing about my the tour of that show, my girlfriend's boyfriend tour, I toured it to 70 cities around the world, Australia, Canada, and UK and everything. A zillion people came up to me. Probably like 40 or 50 people came up to me after shows and would say, that exact same thing happened to me. And I'm like, Laura, what?
Wow.
That? That thing? I mean, I thought that was so specific to me. But I find that the more you share with people, the more you find out just how crazy sort of everyone's lives really are.
We talked about the process of honing and refining, and ultimately you turned one of your most famous stories into that movie we mentioned, Sleepwalk With Me. Let's listen to another clip here.
About 7 years ago, I started walking in my sleep, and I would have these recurring dreams that there was a hovering insect-like jackal in our bedroom. And I was living with my girlfriend at the time, and I would jump on the bed, and I would strike a karate pose. I'd never taken karate, but I had the books from Book Fair, and I would say, Abby, that was my girlfriend, there's a jackal in the room. And she got so used to it, she could talk me down while remaining asleep. She said, there's no jackal in the room, go to bed. And I would say, are you sure? I jumped through a second-story window, and I landed on the front lawn of the hotel. I took a spill, I got back up, and I kept running.
So some clips there from, again, your Sleepwalk With Me story that is from The Moth. It was turned into a film as well. So some of the end of that story, there are glass shards stuck in your leg, you're in your underwear. It doesn't sound like it would be that funny. So what is the process for you of working through that material and making it as funny as it can be?
Yeah, it's definitely, these are stories that are definitely not funny in the early stages. They're stories that when I first put them on stage, in the movie Sleepwalk With Me, my character is a bartender at this bar in Brooklyn called Union Hall. And in real life, I actually lived down the street from Union Hall. I was actually there last night. I do a show called Working It Out and every Monday night. And I put a ton of stuff on stage that is really, it's not carved out, you know, it's not done. And the audience knows that, you know, coming in, they know that that's what they're getting. They're getting the unadulterated version. And that's sort of how I hone these things. A lot of it is I write out a version of it, and then I go on stage and I try to memorize it. And then I go on stage and I go wherever, you know, the audience takes me. You know, I go into details if they're getting laughs, or I go in, you know, I kind of modify on the fly. Stand-up comedy is a really unique art form in the sense that in a lot of ways the audience tells you what is funny about you. You know what I mean? Like there's actually a famous Jerry Seinfeld interview from the early 80s before his sitcom where he says that to be a stand-up comedian you have to listen to the audience. You know, the audience will tell you what's funny about you, and then you sort of have to build from there.
I've read some work lately by comedians saying that, hey, we don't, if I can paraphrase Rodney Dangerfield, we don't get no respect. People think you just get up and you kind of off the top of your head lay out some jokes. Are you underappreciated as a comedian and in that people don't see the work that goes into it?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that's the nature of the art form. The nature of the art form is kind of it's conversational, and it's the illusion of there being no effort. And I feel like if you took away the illusion of there being no effort, then it would feel effortful for the audience, and you don't want it to, right? I mean, I feel like the stand-up comedy shows that I'm at that I don't like as much is when I feel stressed out as an audience member. And that's what I strive to do in my shows, is just to create a feeling in the audience where it's like, oh, this is just fun. Like, you don't have to feel pressure to laugh. You don't have to feel pressure to be serious or clap or whatever. Like, you know, I always hate it when when MCs of shows will come out and go, "You guys ready to laugh?" You know, and people are like, "Oh, I guess so." And they're like, "I can't hear you." And I'm like, "You can hear them. Everybody can hear everybody." No, you don't have to scold people for being audience members. And yeah, that's the other thing that frustrates me too, is when, you know, a comedian will get on stage and, you know, there's not a lot of people in the audience, which, trust me, I've been in a lot of those situations. And a comedian will like scold the audience for being the only people there. You know what I mean? Like, where are your friends? Where are your families? No, these are the people who showed up. You need to be nice to these people.
We're talking right now to Mike Birbiglia, writer and star of the show Sleepwalk With Me and My Girlfriend's Boyfriend. He's also a regular on Public Radio International's This American Life. He's got a new show that he's touring right now. He's going to be touring it in Milwaukee and Madison this weekend, and it's called Thank God for Jokes.
And coming up, we'll talk about the value of jokes, the overlooked value of jokes in our daily lives, and we'd love to take your questions for Mike Birbiglia at 800-642-1234. What do you get out of a joke? Does turning your life into a laugh help you get through it? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. And we're back now with Mike Birbiglia, writer and star of the hit shows Sleepwalk With Me and My Girlfriend's Boyfriend. He's also a regular on PRI's This American Life. He's touring a new show now called Thank God for Jokes.
Mike, in a lot of our daily life, there's not only always time for the messing around, for the jokes. What do we miss out on when we don't joke around?
That's a good question. You're turning me into my philosopher.
What
self.
Do you so think of jokes, Mike?
This is very dangerous. All I can think about is that it's going to be, listening to your newscast, that it's going to be 5 to 10 degrees when I arrive there.
Sorry about that.
At least I'm not upstate in the -5 degrees.
That's right. It's a little things.
Yeah, I don't know. I think jokes are ultimately about, in my opinion, they're about communication. Like, I think that I think back to the parts of my life where I experience the most joy, it's like when I'm like sitting around with my family around the dinner table at Christmas, like late at night, and we tell stories from our year and tell stories from when I was a kid and that kind of thing. And those are moments when I personally feel just most connected to the people around me. I feel like sharing inside jokes with my wife, I think, is like one of the most special things about being married, is having, it's almost like a language. It's like you're sharing something that is, often my wife and I will have a joke that is funny to me and her and no one else other than maybe our cat. and I think that that's special. Like, I really do. I think it's I feel like, you know, so much of our lives is taken with, you know, the drill of getting to work and paying bills and all this, raising kids, all this stuff that people do. And it's, yeah, you have to laugh or else it's just, you can, I think, go a little crazy.
So you say your cat finds you funny sometimes and nobody else, but you do make a living as a comedian. And I know you've got a little bit in your new show, Thank God for Jokes, about meeting a guy at a party. And he kind of goes, "Well, you're not being funny now. How can you be a comedian?"
Come on, funny guy.
I will say that is the odd thing. It's I flew to St. Louis. I flew to St. Louis today. I have a wild week. I flew to St. Louis today, and then I drive to Chicago tomorrow because I'm taping Wait, Don't Tell Me, which is fun. It'll air this weekend. And then to Madison, then Wisconsin, and then Milwaukee. But, I was talking to the guy on the plane today, and I don't really say, when some people ask what I do, I don't say I'm a comedian because it's just, there's too much baggage to it. You know, like, I was at a party a few weeks ago, this guy goes, you know, "Oh yeah, you're a comedian, then how come you're not funny now?" And I wanted to just say, "Well, I'm just going to take this conversation we're having, repeat that to strangers, and then that's the joke. You're the joke later." And it's true. I mean, that's all it is.
didn't your surgeon or something or some doctor or professional use the word comedian in air quotes when he was treating you?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that happened recently. I'll tread lightly on that, what it was. But I was going to see my urologist, and I had a symptom that was disconcerting, and I tried to make an appointment, and it was over Christmas, and so he wasn't in the office, and so I emailed him. I emailed him my symptoms because I was so nervous of whether I should come in right away, and it was a very personal email. Like describing urological symptoms in an email is very tricky, and I even said in the email, "Either way, this is the most personal email I've ever written." And he wrote back, "Shouldn't be a problem. Just come into the office in a few weeks." And then he CC'd a third party who I did not know. And I was like, come on, man. You can't CC a third party on this one. This is private. And then when I was in the office, I talked to them and I said, hey, maybe you shouldn't CC other people when I email you the details. Because I'm a comedian. And he goes, you're a comedian? And I was like, yeah. And then when we were checking out, I think that's not what it's called, but when we were, we were at the desk where they tell you they don't take your insurance. he said to the woman working there, he goes, this is Mike Birbiglia. He's a comedian. And he air quoted it. And I was like, no, not air quotes. This is my job. You must believe me. It's like I don't want to be famous, but I do want to be famous enough that my own doctor knows who I am.
And speaking of being famous, now you're public radio famous. I don't know if we want to throw air quotes around that or not.
Sure,
you've toured before that, and now you're touring after that. What's the difference?
It is different. I mean, I'll tell you, like when I do my shows, when I do my shows now, it's a little bit more like everybody is in on the joke in a certain way. Like there's a, similar to what I was saying about like me and my wife, it's like there's a shorthand with my audience because they know my sense of humor. I don't, like when I was starting out, I would do a lot of shows where it would be like, tonight, comedy, you know, and then I would go on stage as one of five comedians. And typically, the audiences would not enjoy me because I was different from the other comics, you know, like I was sort of more soft-spoken and that kind of thing. Typically about 3 out of 100 people would come up to me afterwards and be like, hey, by the way, almost like it was a secret, actually my favorite. They'd have to say actually, which is offensive. And they would say, you know, you're my favorite. And then I think over the years what's happened is that those 3 out of 100 in every audience has kind of gathered together, and they comprise my audiences now. And so now it's like a really – like when I show up, like I'm doing 2 shows in Madison, 2 shows in Milwaukee, and like, people are excited from go. Like I don't need – it doesn't take 10 minutes to kind of get everybody on the same page.
So you got all the Mike Birbiglia fans together. That's nice.
It's not, yeah. You know, to be honest with you, it's really nice because I don't have the baggage of having a hard time walking down the street because I'm not famous in that way. But when I tour America, people show up and they go to the shows on purpose, which is great.
So in public radio, storytelling is still a really hot watchword. And in lots of ways, that's what you do with your stories that you tell, whether about your urologist or your sleepwalking.
Sure.
And, you know, you've got guys like Marc Maron he's out of his garage and he's telling
sure.
stories about his personal life while he's interviewing people. I mean, do you think stories have sort of reached their tentacles everywhere, including the comedy world? And now it's okay to tell these kind of longer form stories as long as they're funny at the end.
I think so. I really do. I think I feel like what happened is and I'm saying this being a huge fan of Jerry Seinfeld and a lot of comics in that genre. I think that that observational comedy, short form observational jokes, were so popular in the 80s and 90s that. I feel like what we're experiencing now is a little bit of a backlash to that in comedy. which is people don't so meaningless. People want to actually, you know, people want to, you know, show you. I feel like you want to get to know you. I feel like in the best case scenario, performing, they're giving a piece of themselves to the audience. That's a gift. And I feel like, yeah, it is a little bit in vogue right now, but it'll probably swing back the other way in like 5 years. So who knows?
So enjoy it while it's here.
Yeah, exactly. But I think in a lot of ways it's a return to like what Richard, like I feel like a lot of us, Mark Maron included, Doug Stanhope, I think Louis C.K., I think probably Maria Bamford, like a lot of us are inspired.
Mike, we're losing our connection now, and we're about done anyway. We'll let you go. Mike Birbiglia, thank you so much for joining us today.
This is a real pleasure. Thank you.
And I hope you enjoy Wisconsin. That was comedian Mike Birbiglia, frequent contributor to PRI's This American Life and director of the film Sleepwalk With Me. His new show is Thank God for Jokes. He's playing Milwaukee and Madison this weekend.